The first aliyah of Parshas Yisro begins by telling us about Yisro's activities, and the Ora Chaim comments that the Parsha is named after Yisro in order to make the point that Jews do not take pride in their intelligence, even though it may seem like they might, but that's not the point of the Torah. Jews take pride in their morals, and when it comes to intelligence and suggesting good advice, we're happy to allow the non-Jewish character here, Yisro, to get credit and to name the Parsha after him. But one could point out that it's actually not just that the Parsha is named after him, but he himself is named after the Parsha. As Rashi comments here on the first pasuk, one of Yisro's seven names is Yeser, al shem sheyiter Parsha achas b'Torah, that he caused a Parsha to be added to the Torah, the Parsha in which he gives his advice to Moshe. But it's noteworthy, however, that Rashi identifies that parsha with the words V'ata Secheze, which is not actually how that parsha begins. That's in the middle of his words to Moshe. Rameir Shapiro commented that there's a reason it's identified with those words, because anyone can point at a problem, anyone can say what's going wrong, but to provide a solution, that's what makes you deserve credit. So therefore, Rashi uses the words that begin Yisro's actual advice to Moshe. This is an idea that's especially appropriate for Rameir Shapiro, because he himself founded the Daf Yomi as a solution to the issue that people were not learning enough, and wasn't satisfied just to point out it's a problem, but himself point out a solution. So Yisro is credited with adding the parsha specifically with the words that identify his solution. However, if that's the case, that also makes the point that we don't only use the first word of the parsha to identify it, but we use the first significant and important words. So if that's the case, this is even more of a covet for Yisro that we name the parsha after him, given that that's not actually the first word of the parsha. However, the first word of the parsha is significant, because the first word is Vayishma, and the Gemara Mesech Zvachim, and Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amar Aleph, asks the question of what is it that he heard. And as the language indicates, the question is not really what he heard, because the Torah tells us what he heard, but as the Gemara notes, Mashmua Shama Ubavin Iskayer, what is it that caused him to convert? Taking the position that that's what happens here. So the Gemara provides three possibilities, whether it was the attack of Amalek, Matan Torah itself, or Kriyas Yamsuf. Rashi leaves out Matan Torah as one of the possibilities. It is a machlokas in the Gemara over there whether this happened before or after Matan Torah, and the Ramban raises the question that if indeed this was after Matan Torah, why does the Torah not say that he heard that? In the Sefer Salam Derech, he suggests that Kriyas Yamsuf is emphasized here to make the point that there were three possible reactions. That in general, the nations of the world heard about what happened and they were scared, but still went on living the same way without changing anything. Amalek decided to attack, and Yisro had the positive response of deciding to convert. And the Sefer Nachlas Eliezer, quoted by Rabbi Simon in the Sefer Imre Baruch, the question is asked, why did he have to convert because of that? Why didn't he just continue to follow his instincts and to serve Hashem as a Ben Noach? And he suggests that when he saw Amalek's essential suicide mission, it shows the power of a Negiah, it shows the power of a bias, and he recognized that he can't just rely on his intellect, and he decides to go all the way. The reference to Yisro here as the Kohen Midjan, as a priest of idolatry, essentially, seems to be something that would be offensive to him, an embarrassment to him. Rav Schwab suggests that it's mentioned here to emphasize the power of Tshuva Me'ava, that here he comes to join the Jewish people out of a sense of love, and therefore all of his mistakes and all of his sins in the past are now potentially considered as a merit for him to move forward in the future. In the Sefer Iparyon, it was written by the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he suggests that the emphasis to show that he didn't have any ulterior motives, that he was somebody who was already respected in his own culture and didn't have to convert to Judaism in order to be respected, and therefore this is again a source of praise for him. In Pasuk Zion, we're told, "Vayetze Moshe l'kras chosno v'yishtachu v'yishaklo v'yishalu ishlereyehu l'shalom v'yavo ha'ohela." Chazal learn a number of lessons from here. One is the importance of greeting people with shalom, which is itself an imperative, but also the respect that Moshe shows to his father-in-law, the Yalkut understands from here that indeed there is such an obligation to show respect to one's father-in-law. That poses a number of halachic questions, and Tshuva Sesaris Tshuva, he raises the question of why is it that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that a married woman is exempt from obligations towards her parents if they are in conflict with her obligations towards her family and her husband. Wouldn't we say that the husband is also obligated in respect to his own father, and therefore that should mean that her respect to her husband transfers over to his father, and therefore the respect to the father-in-law should come first? So that raises the issue of how exactly to characterize this particular responsibility of kavod. In the Sefer Charedim, in Mitzvah Saseh HaTlius B'Adayim, in Parakei, he writes that the idea of kavod for the father-in-law comes from the fact that since the husband and wife are considered as one, ishto kegufo, so therefore the father-in-law is really considered as if he is the father of the husband. And if that's the case, Tshuvas Mignas Eliyahu points out that would seem to imply that this is a din min haTorah. However, the Birkei Yosef, the Chidah, understands differently that it does go essentially through the husband, that just as the wife is obligated to respect her husband, therefore she's also obligated to respect his father, under the assumption that that is something that he would appreciate. That's also the implication of the Rambam and Hilchos Ishus, in which case it would be a different level of obligation. In the Tshuvas Shemi Shimon, Chelek Aleph Simon Chof Beis, Rav Shimon Palak, he notes a number of differences in the obligation of honor that one has to his father-in-law in comparison to the obligation to one's actual father. And as an example, he notes the practice of referring to one's father, who's also one's rabbi, as Avi Mori. But when it comes to one's father-in-law, who is also one's rabbi, the practice is to switch them around and to say, Moch Mem Vav Ches Mori Vachami. He has two explanations for that. One is chronological, that one becomes the father of someone before he becomes the rabbi of that person. But regarding the father-in-law, it's often the other way around. He becomes a student and then later on perhaps marries his rabbi's daughter and becomes the son-in-law. Another explanation he has is that it has to do with a difference in level, that when it comes to the obligation towards the father, it's a genuine obligation of a Torah nature, and therefore that comes before mentioning that he's also the Rebbe, but when it comes to the honor to a father-in-law, it's of a different level, and therefore we mention first that he is the person's Rebbe, and only afterwards that he is the father-in-law. In the Sefer Nachlas Shimon, in Shmuel Aleph, he has a whole discussion in which he endeavors to make the point that the obligation towards the father-in-law is indeed an inherent obligation, and not only coming through the spouse. The Munkat Rebbe, the Munkat Elazar, has a tshuva about this in Chelik Gimel and Samed Lamed Gimel, in which he raises the question of whether the obligation towards a father-in-law is more demanding than the obligation towards a grandfather, and he comes to the conclusion there that the obligation towards a grandfather is of a more binding nature, is a kal v'chomer from the obligation to a father, even though Chazal also say that the obligation of a father, because of a pasuk in Vayigash, is prioritized over that of a grandfather, but nonetheless, Menachos Elazar writes, the kal v'chomer is still true, that there is a obligation towards the grandfather that comes from that obligation, and he understands that to be a more demanding obligation than the obligation towards the father-in-law. In Pasuk Ches, we find the language Vayisaper Moshe Lechosno Eis Kol Asher Asa Hashem Lefaro LeMitzrayim Alados Yisrael Eis Kol Atala Asher Masasam Baderech V'Yatzilem Hashem. So here Moshe recounts everything that Hashem did to Paro for the sake of the Jewish people. In the Sefer Menachos Aaron, he raises the question that already the beginning of the parsha tells us that Yisro had already heard about this, and he explains that it's different, that Yisro originally thought that this was only the Midas Hadin taking punishment against the Mitzrim for what they did, but the idea that it was actually an act of love towards the Jewish people and done on their sake, that he perhaps didn't fully appreciate, and therefore this is what Moshe was telling him at this point, and this explains differences in the language of the Psukim. The next pasuk tells us Vayichad Yisro al kol hatova asher asa Hashem liYisrael, that he had a reaction. What exactly is the nature of the reaction is a question. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph has possible interpretations, either that it's a reference to a cherev chada, to a sharp knife. In other words, to make the point that he circumcised himself as an act of Geirus, raising an issue among the poskim as to whether or not one can indeed perform bris milah on himself for the purpose of Geirus. It would initially be done by a non-Jew for the purpose of making that person into a Jew, therefore raising an interesting question as to the validity of such a milah. And the other explanation of the Gemara is essentially that his skin was raised in the form of goosebumps, and that itself is somewhat ambiguous. The Torah Tamima raises the question whether that means that he was afraid because of what he heard, or he was happy because of what he heard, and therefore had that reaction. And of course, it's possible that both can be true at the same time. In Pasuk Yud, we hear about Yisrael's reaction to that. Yomer Yisrael Baruch Hashem Asher Hitzil Eschem B'Yamitzrayim Yar Paro Asher Hitzil Asam Mitachis Yamitzrayim. Yisrael blesses God. The Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daf Nadar Amud Aleph tells us that you see from here that one should make a bracha on a miracle. It's recorded in Aruch Chaim and Siman Reish Yud Ches. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph suggests that this is somewhat of an embarrassment to Moshe and to his people that Yisro did this while the Jews did not do this, which is a difficult comment to understand, as the Torah Tumim and others note that they did do the Shira Sayam that we read about in Parshas B'Shalach. So that would seem to suffice for their obligation. Why are they compared negatively to Yisro? So he suggests that perhaps that was just Shavach and Tehillah, but that was not Hodah, it was praise, but it was not an expression of gratitude, and also it didn't say anything about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it only reflected their reaction to Kriyas Yamsuf. Rav Schwab in his Sefer suggests that the Shira that was done, that was for the nation as a whole, while the obligation of a bracha is on individuals. So therefore that raises the question, why did they not recite brachos as individuals, if that distinction is true? And he suggests that they were waiting for the whole episode to be over, or perhaps they only perceived themselves as a nation and not as individuals. The Ksav Sofer suggests that the difference is that Yisro was scared in his reaction, but nonetheless blessed God for his miraculous salvation, and that reflects an attitude that the Jews themselves had not yet lived up to. Pasuk Yud Aleph tells us that Yisro said, "Ato yadaiti ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elohim v'davar asher zadu aleihem," that God has expressed his greatness here because of what he did regarding what they did wrong, what they schemed. And that language of asher zadu, the Gemara in Sotah, Nafir Aleph Mar Aleph, notes that there seems to be midah keneged midah here, as the Torah Tumim understands the language of the Gemara, that the Mitzrim were cooked in the pot that they tried to use against the Jews, in the case of their drowning. And that's one interpretation. The Ramban understands it a little bit differently, that the emphasis here is, had the Mitzrim only enslaved the Jews, they would have been carrying out God's decree, and they wouldn't have deserved punishment to the level that they received. However, because they also went beyond that and conspired to kill the Jews and to do other acts of villainy, so therefore that is why they deserved treatment to this degree. In the last pasuk in the Aliyah, we read about Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe Olo Zvachim Leilukim. Here we see that Yisro brought sacrifices. The Meshech Chachma has a discussion about the nature of these sacrifices, either that this was a karban toda, and therefore the reference in the pasuk lecho lechem to eating bread, or perhaps it was the karban of a ger, of a convert. And even though this is different from the korban that a ger would normally bring of an oaf, here Yisro was like the Jews at Matan Torah, and for that reason brought olos, just another indication of the particular sensitivity and merit that Yisro displayed.